Already in a short time that we've been here, we've been paying close attention, sustained attention to our own moment-to-moment experience with the intention of infusing our experience with awareness, infusing our mind with the light of direct knowing, in order to really understand what mind is, in order to really understand life as it's revealed and as it's expressed through our own human experience. In order to clarify, purify, untangle the knots in our inner life that make our life feel somehow constrained and limited. In order, we could say, that life, as expressed in this human form, can unfold and manifest freely, as freely as life itself unfolds and manifests. When we say life, life itself, tempting to kind of look outside for life, look at nature for life. We might contemplate trees, wind, the stars at night, and in that contemplation be struck by a sense of wonder, maybe, at life's infinity, at life's kind of mysterious intelligence, at life's free, exuberant unfolding, the way life produces itself, maintains itself, expresses itself, the way that trees and wind and stars are all mysterious, extraordinary expressions of life freely unfolding and manifesting. But this too, this human form, this human body, this human mind, this human heart, is one of those expressions of life freely unfolding and manifesting itself. It's also a very particular expression of that, in as much as this form, this being human, has the possibility not just for that unfolding and manifesting, but the possibility to be conscious of itself. To be self-reflective. You know, more self-reflective than a carrot, for example. That might be obvious, but I'll just say what I mean. You know. There's some sense in which vegetation, trees, carrots, are alive. Growing, unfolding, manifesting. Apparently, science tells us, when a carrot is pulled, it goes through some mild trauma that can be measurable in some way. But it's not really comparable. It's a kind of, if there's consciousness in a carrot, it's not a self-reflective consciousness. And then if we go and go up through the evolutionary ladder, we might get to worms, insects, mammals, etc. And we can see the kind of more consciousness as you go up that ladder. And then we could have some debate to the degree to which other mammals, no doubt that they're conscious, right? But there might be some debate about the degree to which they have what I'm calling a self-reflective consciousness. Not just the capacity to experience, but to recognize that we're experiencing. To turn the light of awareness that informs experience back on itself. To know that we know, in other words. So our practice here is, as I say, infusing our experience with awareness. Infusing our mind with awareness. And when I say mind, I'm kind of including the whole breadth of our experience in that. I'll say a little bit more about what I mean by that, but I'd like to actually just check in with you, first of all. What do you mean when you say mind? I was just asking Leela earlier, how do you say mind in Hebrew? And seems like maybe you use different words to refer to different aspects of the mind's functioning, right? But this word, toda, is that right? Toda. I think that's... What do you mean when you hear toda, or when you hear mind? What does that mean to you? Right. Okay. So, the functioning of the brain, and would that include emotional responses as well? And what about when there's a kind of direct experience that doesn't get processed through the thinking mechanism? Like, for example, when I've been encouraging this morning to just pay attention to breath, there may be many moments where we notice we're kind of thinking the breathing. Oh yes, it's coming in, it's going out. But there's a kind of commentary running along with it, right? But there can also be those moments when we're very absorbed in our experience, possibly just in the experience of breathing in that way, possibly absorbed in some other experience, which isn't accompanied by thought. Such is the absorption in the experience. No mind. Okay. All right, so that's true. If we're calling mind just the functioning of the thinking faculty, then there are moments of our experience where there is no mind. And yet, there's something, something's conscious. Well, I'm asking you, you know, I'll give my definition in a minute, but I'm asking you, what do you mean when you say mind? I mean, you know the word, right? What do you mean? So our friend there was saying he means the functioning of the brain. And so there's also then that realm of experience that lies outside of the mind, moments of no mind. I'll repeat if you can't hear that. I'll repeat. You're saying mind would include both of those?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So our friend here is saying with mind as including both conscious experience and what you're calling subconscious. sort of like the container, mind as a container of both those kinds of experience. Okay. So when I use mind generally through the retreat, and particularly in the exploration for this afternoon, I'm using it a little bit like that, in a kind of wide sense, as basically the place wherein all our experience gets revealed. Without needing to divide it particularly into conscious and unconscious, but rather I'm a little reluctant to use the word container of experience, because container suggests that there's kind of some edges, that it's something distinct. Okay. But mind as the medium of experience. We might also use other words that would be synonymous, like psyche, or consciousness. Consciousness is another word that's a little difficult, and we use it in everyday speaking with different kinds of meanings. But today, if I'm saying mind, psyche, consciousness, I'm suggesting the kind of the medium of our experience, where everything happens, where our experience of body happens, where our experience of thought happens, where our experience of emotional life happens, and where experience that we wouldn't describe as mental, or emotional, or physical, can still happen. Some of our experience, and as our meditation practice deepens, we might recognize, we might report experiences that we would say are not mental, not physical, and not emotional, not energetic, don't seem to be defined by any of the normal terms of our experience, and yet they're very much clear, direct, real, authentic, alive experiences, and they're happening right here. So that sense of right here-ness that includes bodily life, emotional life, mental life. But before we go any further, just as you sit here, just to see if you can rather directly, in the way that I've been pointing to in the transition moments at the end of meditation, just sensing rather directly your presence of mind, presence of consciousness, fact that there's a right here-ness. This right here-ness is really the ground of any kind of real spiritual work. The understanding of this right here-ness, the development of this right here-ness, and the dissolving of the obstacles that stand in the way of us knowing this right here. Most of the time, unless we've done quite a lot of kind of inner work, unless we've spent quite a lot of time really paying attention to this right here-ness, the immediacy of being conscious, then our experience tends to be kind of narrow and driven along by habit. And you'll have no doubt noticed, you know, just even since being here yesterday evening, even with this simple instruction to just be present with breathing, that the habitual movements of mind are kind of, the momentum of them is just running along. The momentum of planning, or the momentum of worrying, the momentum of regretting, the momentum of remembering, the momentum of endlessly describing to ourselves what's happening, the momentum of measuring right or wrong, the momentum of trying to make ourselves fit into a certain idea of ourselves, the momentum of judging other people, the momentum of judging ourselves, the momentum of imagining how the other people might be judging us. A lot more complicated than the immediacy of right here. That right here, presence of being conscious, the medium of which in which all our experience happens, never goes away. It's never absent. But it becomes very difficult to recognize when we're caught up in the momentum of those different things I just described. It's like we get tunnel vision. And the wide, broad, vast, free, effortlessness of our nature, the medium of our experience, the directness of being, it gets narrowed down, tunnel vision, until we're just fixating on one small aspect. Maybe that there's some discomfort in meditation, and we're fixating on our knee. And the whole vastness of possibility, of being human, of freely manifesting and unfolding our humanness, has gotten reduced to just my knee and what I need to do about it and how long it's going to last and when's the bell going to ring. And the more we obsess about it, the more narrow, the more tight, the more fixed things become. Until it seems like knee is a real thing of itself, like, you know, separated out from the rest of everything, just knee. So we keep telling ourselves, my knee, my knee, my knee. If you say again, my knee, my knee, my knee, my knee, knee starts to seem like a real thing, rather than the movement of some heat or pressure or tension or tingling that's happening within this field of experience. So our relationship to our consciousness really depends on how our awareness is and what it's directed towards. And in fact, maybe the word awareness also needs a little defining. I wonder if anyone would like to share. What do you understand when you hear the word awareness? What is awareness? Yeah. Connected, maybe, right. A sort of direct knowing, sort of being directly connected to what's happening. Okay, that's a pretty good working definition. Let's use that. Sometimes, I just want to go through a little bit the kind of some levels of that. Sometimes, we're so caught up in the various different momentums that I was just describing that we're just trying to establish some awareness. So we've been using breath and belly to establish what our friend was just calling a direct connection with what's happening. And we may notice that there's a direct connection for just half a moment, half a breath, before some new momentum catches us. The direct connection, at least experientially, gets lost, and then we're off obsessing about something, remembering something, planning something, describing something, criticizing something, worrying about something, anticipating something, etc. So in terms of this practice of infusing our experience with awareness, this practice of freeing the unfoldment of our being, of consciousness, of this medium which can experience. When that momentum's coming again and again and again, catching us again and again and again, that's a perfectly appropriate way of meeting it. It's not a wrong thing, it's not a beginner's thing, it's not something to get past. It's totally the appropriate response. It really doesn't matter whether we've been meditating since yesterday evening or whether we're a career meditator of decades. If the momentum of our kind of discursive mind, thinking mind, obsessing mind is getting hold of our experience, then our practice is just recognizing that and coming back some direct connection. And there's something wonderful about breathing as a kind of as a point of reference for that. Wonderful why? Because we don't need to do anything. There's enough doing going on already, right? We don't need to do anything to breathe. It's happening by itself. And breathing is something kind of mysterious. It's not just a physical experience of expanding and contracting. As our mind changes, so our breathing changes. If you get kind of anxious or worried, then your breath changes accordingly. If you feel particularly peaceful, contented, breath changes accordingly. The speed of the breath, the roughness of the breath, the places that we most feel the breath in the body. The sense of expansion and contraction, in fact, can be one in which the whole of what we've been calling the medium of experience, the whole of our consciousness, can be felt to be expanding and relaxing, and relaxing. Breath is actually an example of two of the most fundamental qualities of life. That it's expansive. Like I say, if we contemplate trees, stars, sky, the sense of infinity, the sense that life is expansive. Life expands, enlivens, creates, dynamizes. Life produces and reproduces. One of the most fundamental facts of life is that it's expansive, spacious. And one of the other most fundamental facts about life is that it's somehow completely at rest within itself. In-breath and out-breath express those fundamental aspects. And personally, after 20 years of being pretty seriously and passionately engaged with meditation practice, I would say as rarely a day goes by without having some kind of new appreciation or new insight or new recognition of the way in which just the breath itself reveals something profound about life, something profound about the nature of my participation in life, in terms of the expansiveness of what's happening, and in terms of the restfulness, the invitation towards a free, easeful rest with what's happening. So that's one level of the way we infuse our experience with awareness. We recognize when we're caught up and we drop it and come back to awareness, come back to direct connection. And at the moment, using breath and body. Sometimes, and when we've cultivated particularly a certain degree of skill in that direct connection, our minds are not getting, the momentum isn't the primary activity of mind. So, first of all, when there's no kind of training of the mind, that momentum is so strong, as I say, that it seems to be almost all that's happening. It's just the various momentum of getting caught up in this, caught up in that, caught up in the future, caught up in the past, caught up in thought. But sometimes, and you may have had tastes of this already since you've been here, some of you have really committed to this practice, and will have many tastes or experiences wherein those kind of momentums don't get such a grip. They're not what's filling up all the space. And the sense of direct connection is more primary than the ways the mind gets caught up. That may be direct connection with some primary object like breathing, where what's most obvious, most standoutful, not a word, but you know what I mean, what stands out most in our experience is the direct connection, the space of awareness, the fact of presence, the realness or the immediacy of this medium of experience, this medium of consciousness in which breathing is happening, in which also thought is happening, in which the state of mind is changing, sometimes contented, sometimes agitated, sometimes very clear, sometimes confused. But more primary than the movement or the momentum, more primary than the story of thinking about this or thinking about that, is the very fact of the connection. That's very significant. It's another way in which our experience is infused by awareness. Because we start to notice, if what's primary is the sense of connection, what's happening within that connection doesn't matter so much. Mind may be clear, or the mind may be confused. Mind may be peaceful, or mind may be agitated. Mind might be going to the future, mind might be going to the past. Maybe the movement of worry or jealousy or fear, some kind of difficult emotional expression, or there may be the movement of appreciation, love, tenderness. So those have a very different quality, right? We much prefer love, and tenderness and appreciation to fear or jealousy or anxiety. But if what's primary is the direct connection, sense of the medium of consciousness in which all those things are happening, then we don't get so hung up on whether we're experiencing this or that. Because what recognizes, what's in touch with, what's directly connected to fear, for example, isn't itself afraid. Fear is something that happens, that arises, that forms, that reveals itself within our medium of consciousness. The medium of consciousness is expansive. There's enough room for this movement and that movement without getting completely caught up in it, without the momentum giving us tunnel vision. What that which is aware of anger isn't itself angry. So we start to really develop the capacity to actually be aware of anger, for example, not to push it away, not to justify it, not to think, oh, that's not a very spiritual thing to feel, but at the same time, not to have to act it out, not to fuel the fire with the story of what happened and what he said and what she did and what I should have done and how dare they and all the ways we drive our anger along. So the possibility of awareness infusing our experience in such a way that the movements of mind don't get such a grip on us. So that, as I was saying yesterday evening, everything really is welcome. We don't actually get to choose our experience. We'd like to think we do. We put a lot of energy into trying to feel good, trying to have a nice experience, sometimes with the belief, even though it's a kind of crazy belief, but usually, in fact, with the belief that if I just get everything right, I could have one nice experience after another. So we try to buy nice experiences, we try to organize others to provide us with nice experiences. We maybe come on retreat to try and have a nice experience. But sooner or later, and it's usually sooner, some not nice experience comes along. It doesn't matter who we are, it doesn't matter how attractive we are, it doesn't matter how old we are, it doesn't matter how wealthy we are. Nobody has ever managed to string together an endless stream of nice experiences. Life just ain't like that. Some things we like, some things we don't like. Some things are sweet and lovely and beautiful, and some are unwelcome and a real drag. If we're dependent on the momentum to give us nice experiences, we're definitely going to be frustrated, disappointed, and resentful when unnice, when unlovely, when difficult, when unpleasant experiences are there. To the extent that we start to see there's something about the fact of being awake, being conscious, something about this medium of consciousness in which experience arises, that we start to get more interested in the space around experience than caught up in the quality of experience. whether we like it or not. Is that clear the way I just said it? No. Okay, I'll try to say it again. Rather than obsessing, trying to get what I like, trying to keep away from what I don't like, right? Which has a certain value to it. It's important to recognize what's important, what do I want to orientate towards, what do I want to leave aside. But that easily becomes, and in fact it is for the great majority of people, a kind of neurotic chasing after something and being in fearful relationship to what we don't like and in compulsive relationship towards what we do like. And I'm contrasting that movement with, as we recognize that there's more space, as we recognize around those movements, as we recognize that those movements arise within mind, in its largest sense, within the medium of experience, then we start to see that the space is more significant than the movement. That what knows anger isn't itself angry. That what recognizes fear isn't itself fearful. That we can't make all our experiences pleasant. But that we can free up the way we meet in terms of our, in terms of the space around it. So, as awareness infuses our mind, infuses the medium of our experience, we start to discover a lot more freedom in terms of what we experience. The freedom to experience whatever's here without wrestling with it, struggling with it, fighting with it, negotiating with it, trying to make it into something else. What more did I want to say? We're going to do an exercise about this in a minute. Okay, maybe that's enough. So I'll explain the exercise I'd like us to do. And